Good morning, church. It's a good morning, isn't it? I got to open the windows last night and sleep with the windows open. I was happy. I woke up very, just revived this morning, and it's a good morning. Before I get started this morning, just a show of vulnerability, because we all need to show it as an example, but because we need it. I mentioned in class this morning that my father-in-law is about ready to, well, how do I say this without assuming? He has an appointment on Tuesday, and based on that appointment, he'll probably have to go in for his third open heart this week. So we're going to ask for your prayers. They go through the side. They don't crack his chest open. They go through the side. The valve is not healing. The valve, we don't know if will have to be replaced again or if it will, they'll have to do something else. We're praying for the Lord's wisdom for these doctors. And so between that and Mary trying to find a job and us figuring out whether we're going to have to go north for the surgery, well, we will go north. I don't know when it'll be. We're pretty vulnerable right now. So it's okay to share with your brothers and sisters and ask for their prayers. So we're going to ask for your prayers today and through this week so we know what's going on and things will get better. Let's get started with my sermon. A little boy hears the sound of an ice cream truck in the distance and longs for the push-up pop that is, by the way, you know what a push-up pop is still, right? We still know what those are. I mean, those are long old things, but they're still around, okay? He longs for a push-up pop that his mom had promised him that the ice cream truck would come along. And so he hears it in the door. He hears the sound of the ice cream truck many blocks away, and he knows that ice cream truck is going to be coming by. After all, you know, mom put the $1.50. I don't know how much they cost now, how much they used to cost. She put the $1.50 on the table next to the door so that when the ice cream truck came by, she could hurriedly grab the money and take him out there because he's too little to go out on his own. And he keeps hearing that ice cream truck. And that little boy thinks it's getting closer and closer, and he can't stand it. And so finally, realizing that the ice cream truck is going to come down his street, he just knows that he grabs the $1.50 and he heads out the door in one of the worst streets in Cleveland, Ohio. His mom is busy in the kitchen. She knows that the ice cream truck is coming. She knows, and so she looks over towards the door, and she realizes that $1.50 is gone. And immediately, mom's intuition kicks in. She knows that little boy has gone to find that ice cream truck, and the little boy is running down the street. Just knowing that ice cream truck is within the distance, he can't see it yet, but he can hear it. He keeps running down the street until the sound of the ice cream truck keeps getting further and further away. And suddenly the little boy doesn't hear the ice cream truck anymore. And he stands there on a street that he doesn't know, in one of the worst streets of Cleveland, and he looks around, and all of a sudden he has no idea where he's at. And he has no idea how to get home. And I mentioned mom. Mom sees the $1.50 is gone. And mom bolts out that door and down those steps, and she wheels around both ways looking for her child, and she can't really see him until she looks way down the street and she sees the top of a head. And panicked, crying, stricken with fear, she runs with all her might. She's reaching for that child. She just knows she has to get to that child because that child is lost. The child has nowhere to go. And finally, the mom catches that child and begins to give that child a hug. But you know something? Millions of people are in that little boy's position right now. You see, it must be so hard to be among the millions. Now, we don't see them here in little Pocahontas. We don't see the millions that are reaching and groping and listening for God. but they're out there. Because we're busy in the kitchen. We're busy doing our own thing. We're busy. We've got that $1.50 at the door when we need to go out. But see, we're not ready to go out yet. And so we figure out what is the best way to reach those millions that are groping and reaching and listening for God. And we wonder, how can we make it better? How can we save just one of those in that large crowd in little old Pocahontas? Well, in the world of ministry, there's something called incarnational ministry. Now, that's a pretty big word or a pretty big phrase, and so let's see if we can break it down, what incarnational ministry is all about, so you can understand a little bit better. Some people will say that incarnational ministry is the big fisherman. We call it the big fisherman theory. You see, the big fisherman is we decided that one guy, that one preacher, that Billy Graham, that Joel Osteen, that's going to reach the masses, and so we send him and him only. And he gets up in front of hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people maybe on TV, and he begins to talk about Christ. And we say, there is our mom running down the street. There's the person that's going to reach the masses. There's the person that we know that can save those millions. Some of us like to use the ambush method. Now, if you're honest with yourself, we've probably used that in our lifetime. You know, that's where you bring them over to your house and we start talking about God, but you promise them a good meal, or you promise them you're going to buy them lunch, or you do something, but while you get them there, you're going to talk about God. They don't know it yet. But that's what you're going to do while you've got a captive audience, and you're going to trap them, and you're going to ambush them with the fact that we're going to talk about God whether you like it or not. Well, I don't think that's incarnational ministry at all. Some will use the safari method. We're pretty good at that, at least in the Church of Christ. And I know the Baptists do it, and I know the Jehovah's Witnesses are great at it. We just go knocking on doors. You know, that door, that impersonal door that you walk up to and you bang on, and you say, can we talk about God? You don't know them. You don't know who they are. You don't know how they're hurting. You don't know what they need, but you want to talk about God and throw God in their face and say, you need Christ more than anything else. We've tried that. I've done this. And it didn't have much success, let me tell you that. Maybe we want to use the gospel gun. Now, I couldn't find the gospel gun in the picture. But this was actually and true a gun, big round gun that you put tracks into. You know those tracks we would always hand out that every Church of Christ would have in the back on their wall that you picked one up if you needed to talk about baptism or you needed to talk about some type of salvation. And this gun actually would fire them out the end of the gun and they would just sporadically go out into a crowd. And we were going to save people that way. And we were going to be ministers that way because we were just going to shoot our tracks at them. And finally, the robo machine. We actually had one of these, the church once that I had. We used it for our own families, by the way, but it was still a gun or a machine that would call you and give you an inspirational message to lift you up during your day, or maybe tell you when someone had died during the week. We've tried to save people that way. You get a message, say, press 1 if you want to hear more about Christ. But see, none of these are incarnational ministry. None of these are the things that we need to look at when we need to decide how we're going to approach people. I had it on my docket to talk, my calendar, to talk about something else today, but Leon and I were talking about this week about how we're to approach people, how we're supposed to meet people and how we minister to people, and that just upset my apple cart all the way around. And so you're getting this sermon today, and if you don't like it, blame him. Just because, you know, it's just was heavy on my mind. And so let's talk about what real incarnational ministry is all about. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19 through 23. And I hope you can read that. I think you can. I can imagine Paul here talking to the Corinthian people, and for just a minute, I hope you'll let me take the place of Paul. I don't claim to be as good as Paul. I don't claim to be on the same spiritual level as Paul. But just let me take his place for a minute as he speaks here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. It's going to be behind me. You can follow along in your scriptures just to make sure that what's behind me is correct. And so Paul says something like this. You know, I was free from it all. I was. But I've made myself a servant to all that I might win more of them. Now, I realize, you know, that you might be thinking, who in their right mind would put himself under the under a law? Who would put himself under people? Well, I chose to do that. I chose to do that because I'm not in my right mind, really. And I didn't have a wife to you know, to keep me in my right mind. Now, I don't know if he would say that. But I can hear Paul saying that. I can hear Paul saying that I've made myself a servant, a slave, a doulos in the Greek. Same word. I've made myself a slave, probably in the King James, that I might win more of them. He goes on in verse 20, he says, to the Jews, let's go back. He says, to the Jews, I, Paul, became as a Jew. In order to win the Jews, to those under the law, I became as one under the law. Though, you know, I'm not really under the law, that I might win those under the law. I actually gave up my freedom. Now, I realize in Corinth here, we're not really used to giving up our freedoms, are we? We like our freedoms. We like to do what we want to do. We don't like anyone to tell us. But, you know, I actually gave those up. That I might reach somebody. And that means that I let other people have their way. Imagine that, Corinth. Imagine that I just let people do their own thing and I submit to them. You know, it wasn't like Timothy. You know, when I forced him in Acts chapter 12:3 and to be circumcised, yeah, he submitted there, didn't he? I made him be circumcised, guys, and he was old. He didn't like that. I wouldn't either. And I even went as far as took a Nazarite vow because I needed to become a Nazarite because there were those that needed to listen to me. You see, to them that were under the law, I became. And not only the Jews, but I became to the most legalistic of them all. I submitted to them. Oh, I didn't have to. I didn't have to become like them. I'm under the liberty of Christ. I had every freedom in the world to walk away from that, but I didn't. They were innocent concessions. They were harmless and generous I just harmlessly and generously gave in with a loving spirit. Can you hear Paul saying that? Do you understand what he's doing here? This is incarnational ministry. I'll show you more in a minute. But I want to share with you, Barry, I'm back. I want to share with you a time where I had a same thing. Was Dayton the first church I tried out at? I think so. In the very first church, once I became a minister, or once I thought I was a minister, I tried out at a church in Dayton, Ohio. And then I walked into that congregation, I don't know, maybe 100 people, and the very first question that was asked to me was, how old is the earth? Now, I'm not a dummy. I realized what this guy was asking. He wanted to know if I believed in old earth or an old earth or a young earth. Meaning a young earth says that from creation to now is about 500-700 years old, because that's the chronology we have of the Bible. But there are some who believe that it's the old earth, that God used creation through thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of years to create the earth, and we are where we're at today. Now, I could have said, I don't choose to answer that because it really doesn't matter. But what I did say was, it's about 5,700 years old. Because see, that's what he was wanting to hear. That's what he believed in, and it would have been futile to do anything different. I gave in. I let him have his way. And therefore, we had a great relationship and a wonderful conversation after the fact. Sometimes we don't have to have our own way, no matter if we believe we're right or not. Sometimes there are times when we just give in, when it's better to reach people. He goes on in verse 22, Paul says, and to those, you know, outside the law, I became as one outside the law. You know, not being outside the law of God, because, you know, I would never do that, but I'm under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. I can hear him say things like, you know, to the heathens, I became a heathen. Although I never really did those things, I never offended them. They said things and did things, and I never judged them. I never made them feel uncomfortable. I always wanted them to feel like I could be a part of them, although I wasn't going to compromise my own beliefs. Because there was someone there that I needed to talk to about Christ. And I can hear him say this. He goes on and he says, to the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I can hear Paul thinking in his own mind, you know, Paul was a pretty strong person, we know that. Being stoned, he got right back up and went right back into the city where he had been stoned because he was going to talk about Christ. That's pretty strong. And yet Paul does something and he says, you know what? I'm going to become weak and let the other person have their way. A parent looks at their children and sees differences, and they don't punish the same way. And they don't reward the same way either. At least I hope you don't. A grandmother doesn't treat their grandchildren the same way. She knows that each one has their own personality and should be treated differently. And I think that's what Paul is doing here when he talks about incarnational ministry. And a Christian doesn't push their will on the weak or their will on anyone if it's going to upset the apple cart. And so finally, he goes on and he says, I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Now, I heard a preacher say this week as I was just getting having my cup filled this week. And they said, you know, if we're on this earth for any other reason than to bring others to Christ, then we're in the wrong world. If we're on this earth to do anything but bring another soul this week to Christ, then we're in the wrong game. And it reminded me, it almost shocked me with the fact that, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes I think we're playing the wrong game. Paul reminds us that it is my responsibility, it is my incarnational ministry every single day of my life to look for the other person. So what does it look like today? In John chapter 1, verse 4, we see God, Christ, come down to this earth, and we see him become like us. Now, he didn't have to. It wasn't easy for him to, I'm sure, because maybe it was. He says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That means, ladies and gentlemen, that he was willing to come to earth. He was willing to be like us. He was willing to smell like us. Can you imagine that? That a God was willing to smell like us, that he was willing to love us as bad as we are, and that he was willing to be with us and not condemn us. Ladies and gentlemen, that is what incarnational ministry is. And so what we see from God, or what we see from Christ through it all, is a holistic ministry. A holistic ministry where we take care of all three parts of each other. And this is where it gets rough. And this is where the rubber meets the road. Because we see Christ in John chapter 2 taking care of wine for a wedding. The social needs. Taking care of the social events. Taking care of the social part of a person's life. We see Christ taking care of them. Now, some of us have a problem with that, and I'm okay with that if you have a problem with that. At least the water, or the wine, I'm sorry. I won't argue that point. But we see Christ taking care of that. We see Christ taking care of the spiritual needs. We're in John chapter 4. He goes to the woman and says, you know what? You've had all these husbands. Now I'm asking you to go and sin no more. I'm sorry, we've got a situation, just so you know, we've got a situation going on right now that we're taking care of. So it's got me a little distracted, and I know the guys are working on it. Just hang with me and stay with me, and let's focus back here, and we're going to be okay. But we talked, I'm just going to break here a minute and talk. We talked a little bit about security with our elders. Talk about a right turn or a squirrel moment. We talked about our security here at Westridge, and that the elders are concerned for your care and concerned for your security. That's what we're working on right now. I've watched it happen all through the sermon, and so we're just making sure you're safe, okay? So don't be scared. Everything's good. But we're just taking care of that right now. So that's what you see going on. Okay, let's back to it. Incarnational ministry means that we take care of the whole person. The whole person. Not only the social needs, not only the spiritual needs, but also their personal needs. Where Jesus feeds the 5,000. Where Jesus takes care of the person that's hurting. Where Jesus heals a person. I said to Leon this week, and I said it in class Wednesday night, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's exactly what's going on here in incarnational ministry. I can't reach someone, you can't reach someone, until you have that relationship with them. Until they know that you're more concerned about them than you are about yourself. That you're more concerned about things like, by, you know, do you even care about the way they speak? Now I realize that's about to get real important here, in this county, in this city. If we expect to reach people in this community of the visitors coming in of our new minister of our new Pocahontians. New pokey people, however you say it. If we expect to reach people in pokey, then we've got to care about the language that is spoken. We've got to care about their who they are. Are we even interested in learning who they are? Or are they over there and we're over here and it doesn't matter? Or maybe we're just scared of the people around us. Maybe we're just scared of them and we're just going to leave them over there. Instead of being caring people? Or do we become like Paul? Do we become like them? Do we speak their language? Do we eat their meals? Do we cook on a spit in the front of the house to make them feel more welcome? Now, I don't know if these things will happen, but I know that we need to take care of them. And I know that we need to be incarnational. Incarnational ministry is nothing more than being like them and letting them know about us. It's a big word that means love your neighbor as yourself. It's a big word that says we love them before we worry about our own worries. It means that maybe someday in this auditorium, we're singing a song in Spanish, and then we're singing a song in English. Can you imagine that day where this congregation actually learns a song in Spanish and we sing with them? It means that we reach out to them and we love them and we care for them. And I'm going to end it this way. We're going to skip the next couple slides. A mother's voice calls out in panic and frustration. She remembers the $1.50 she left on the table. She remembers the sound of the ice cream truck, she was too busy to take her son to the truck. The moment she was in the kitchen on the phone doing dishes, whatever it may have been, the buzzer goes off to the dryer, and she looks around and she sees the $1.50 gone. She runs down that stoop and she looks both ways, just like I've said, and she looks for that little boy off in the distance, and she sees the top of his head, and she begins to run to that little boy. And with that same desire that she has to reach that little boy, and with that same satisfaction and the same crazy love that she has for that child, that she doesn't want anything to happen to that child on that worst street, Cleveland, Ohio. Do we feel that for the person standing in the middle of a street in Pocahontas who doesn't know God? Do we have the same crazed feeling of getting to our child and protecting them with the same feeling we have for reaching out to that child in our community who has never heard about Christ? Only you can answer that because you're the one that feels that. Do you hear the voices of the lost? Do you feel the panic and frustration that they're lost? If you don't, I'm going to suggest that your focus is off. I'm going to suggest that your hearing is muted. I'm going to suggest that you don't know what your job here is on earth. And I'm going to suggest that we need to maybe change our focal point. We need to maybe put in some hearing aids. We need to adjust our glasses. We need to let Christ work on our heart and get the callus off our heart and make sure that we hurt for that one lost over the 99 found. And we need to be willing to go down the street crying and screaming for that one that's lost. Ladies and gentlemen, incarnational ministry starts with you. It doesn't start with me being the preacher. It doesn't start with the elders because they're your spiritual leaders. It doesn't start with the deacons who have all these programs going and making sure the church is standing each week. It starts with you and your desire to reach and be holistic, social, physical, and spiritual, and feeling that they're lost. Let's pray. Father, I pray that you somehow, in some way, you touch our hearts. Somehow, in some way, you wake us up. Somehow, in some way, you make us realize that our job here is not to be comfortable, and our job is not here to have the most beautiful house and the most beautiful land and the most beautiful whatever. Father, help us realize that we're sojourners, that we're here for one reason and one reason only, and that's to serve you. And that service starts by loving our neighbor and caring for them and wanting them to find out about you. Father, I realize that we can't have an effect on every single soul, and that every single soul will follow you. I know that, Father. But help us to try and just talk to every soul. Help us to realize that you're first. And help us to leave it all to you. And solve this through your Son. Amen. The invitation is extended. If you need something, please come forward. If you're ready to start your life right, let's stand and sing. Oh, of Jesus and